Omaha Sports Insider with Joe Quinn and Nick Handley. Your calls are welcome at 402-573-0590. Now, here's Joe and Nick.
We got to get into Kyler Murray. That needs to happen. But real quickly on the American Alliance Football that actually made a lot of positive headlines over the weekend. I think a lot of people, maybe they just weren't ready to let go of football, and there were enough familiar names that were involved both locally in the state of Nebraska and then, of course, nationally.
Yeah, well. I could tell if, like, there was a whole bunch of it on my Twitter timeline. I just didn't know if it was actual excitement or people were just
sarcasm?
Like, I have to cover this because they're a Husker football player.
Well, I thought nationally it was getting a lot of positive juice, too. Now, how about the game that I got a chance to catch for about a quarter was the offensive showdown between the minds of Mike Martz versus Mike Riley. I mean, that was it doesn't get any better than that. It just doesn't. I actually didn't mind what I saw.
Mid-90s NFL right there.
I know. Baby. I know. I didn't mind what I saw. I really didn't. Now, they have a lot of different things in their rules. There's the no kickoffs or extra point kicks. There's no onside conversion. The Sky Judge. I love the name of that, the Sky Judge. I saw that come into play, and then they actually, like, put a screen graphic of what the Sky Judge is, and the Sky Judge just says, corrects obvious and egregious errors. I mean, it's like God. It's like football's version of God.
Yeah.
The Sky Judge.
I saw one tweet was like, yeah, this is a legal hit in our game, and it was like a hard hit on a quarterback.
Oh, yeah, smoked him, and his helmet comes popped off, too. Yeah,
I guess that's part of the appeal.
Yeah, it was a pretty and I think, wasn't that on Philip Nelson, the old Minnesota quarterback? I think it's who it was. But overtime is one possession for each team from the opponent's 10-yard line. So there you go. It was interesting, though. But afterwards, and I go back to that Mike Riley, Mike Martz showdown, there was a picture, and it was like, look at all the old familiar faces in the AAF. And it shows Bill Polian talking to Mike Riley. And we'll get to Riley's
outfit,
his digs here in a second. Behind him was a very ominous-looking Sean Eichhorst. Now, of course, the game took place in Texas. He works in the Texas Athletic Department. But Mike Riley, who either looks like he is dressing up as like an old-school gangster from like the 90s with the baggy pants and like a flannel shirt on.
How do you do, fellow kids?
Yeah, with his stocking cap on. Like, I don't know what he was trying. It was just weird. Either that or he looks comfortable, though. Yeah, either that or he's being a lumberjack.
Yeah.
Like he was trying to, maybe he's sponsored by Duluth Trading. I don't know. But it was hilarious, like what he was wearing. So you had to kind of get past that. But then once you're like, what is Riley wearing? You look behind him, and it's as if Sean Eichhorst continues to blame Mike Riley for his demise because he had a look on him. Like you typically see, it's almost like the look that maybe, I assume, that Jack Ruby gave Lee Harvey Oswald before he went and shot him.
Yeah.
Like
ginger, as Bo Pelini would refer to it as.
If you haven't seen it, it's everywhere. I mean, just go on social media. You'll find the Mike Riley hanging out with Bill Polian with his, whether we want to call it the old 90s gangster or the...
We're about to go saw some logs.
Yeah, the Duluth Trading poster boy. It was great. But then there's just Sean Eichhorst behind him like,
brooding, yeah.
That guy. But it was fantastic photo. So you heard the big news in the top of the hour. Well, let me ask you this, TJ, because you brought this up in headlines. Were you surprised that Kyler Murray decided to go full-fledged football?
Not really. No. And this is what I wanted.
Like I did too.
I kind of think the more safe and somewhat financial, just down the road, could be baseball, just because you know what could happen potentially with career-ending injury in the NFL. We just saw kind of with Alex Smith and obviously the whole concussions thing. But like you brought up in the first hour, I mean, quarterbacks, they couldn't be more safer now than they have been in like the entire league. And usually there's quarterbacks I kind of fall in love with in college, like Tim Tebow, whenever Colin Kaepernick was able to be on for Nevada on one of the ESPNs. Of recent, Lamar Jackson, Baker Mayfield, and I was just kind of always worried. I love watching those guys in college, but I was like, oh man, is this going to translate to the NFL? Well, now the NFL is kind of translating to them. They're making it easier for these guys to play in the league, it appears, with the kind of seasons Baker had. Jury's right. a little out on Lamar Jackson, although he's just a terrific athlete. But this is what I always wanted because Kyler was spectacular to watch Oklahoma this year. Absolutely loved watching him every week. So selfishly, yeah, I wanted him to pick football because I wanted to see a stat line where he's going to throw 40 times a game and then he's going to run for another 10. So he's doing like 50 things out there. Where compared to baseball, unfortunately, his stat line could look 1-for-4, K, double, maybe one defensive play. So compared 50 plays to 5 plays, yeah, I was super excited that he picked football. And like you mentioned first too, financially right away,
yeah,
he's going to make a lot yeah. more money. And then we don't know. Baseball is such a skill sport to me more than an athletic one. If you just aren't able to hit that baseball mm-hmm. consistently around at least 250, it is a tough sport to make it in. And, yeah, who knows? He maybe would have just got lost in the minors for a couple years.
Yeah, and that would have been a shame if you give up a career in football. I know we've seen people start off baseball, and if that's the case, then you could maybe go back into football. But there's nothing to say that you will be the same kind of player that yeah. you were coming out of college. And this is where Joe and I have disagreed on. He wanted to see the A's, you know, just absolutely go after Kyler Murray as far as recouping money.
Yeah.
And you know what? To me, it's still a young
person.
They didn't
have to draft him. That was kind of like
no, exactly. I put this on the adults here.
Yeah.
I put this on the adults who should have known better. And yeah, okay, Kyler Murray technically is an adult. But Kyler Murray is, he's got a rare opportunity to choose between two things that make him very happy to earn a living. I mean, how many of us would sit there and be like, nope, sorry, I got to honor my contract. Like, to me, that's not realistic. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just, that's wishful thinking to be like, well, yeah, you could do this. You could make even, I mean, twice as much money.
How many college athletes honor their letter of intent all 4 years?
Right, exactly. You could be the face of an organization, but you know what? You need to do good by your word. Like, come on. That's you're living in a fantasy land if you think that's the case. And the A's, that's my point. They should have known better. And here's what's going on now with that contract with the A's. He will return $1.29 million of the $1.5 million signing bonus money the A's gave him last year. He will forfeit the remaining $3.16 million that would be due to him in March 1st. The A's will put him on the restricted list and retain Murray's rights, but they will not get a compensatory draft pick. So usually when this happens, you do get, if a guy ends up bailing out, you get a compensatory draft pick. That's not going to happen for the Oakland A's. So it sounds like, you know what? All the money that was given to Kyler Murray is coming back. The only thing that kind of stings is that they will not get a compensatory draft pick. I don't know the reason why they don't. I'm sure there's some reason why. This was Kyler Murray's statement when he announced that he was going to play football. He said, moving forward, I'm firmly and fully committing my life and time to becoming an NFL quarterback. Football has been my love and passion my entire life. I was raised to play quarterback, and I very much look forward to dedicating 100% of myself to being the best quarterback possible and winning NFL championships. I've started an extensive training program to further prepare myself for upcoming NFL workouts and interviews. I eagerly await the opportunity to continue to prove to the NFL decision makers that I am franchise quarterback in this draft. Now, here's the other part of this that I look at and say, this is where the A's probably should have known better, but I understand their thought process when they said, go ahead and play football one more semester. He wasn't being looked at or even considered to be an elite-level quarterback. After Baker Mayfield, people thought, this is going to be the other guy. This is the guy that's going to kind of try to pick up the pieces for the Oklahoma team. A talented guy, but not the same kind of quarterback as Baker Mayfield. I think there was probably...
Boy, were we wrong.
Yeah.
Because he put up better numbers than Baker.
And I think there was part of Kyler Murray, kind of going off of what he just said there, that this has always been a love of his, an interest of his. He's always enjoyed it. I think he probably also thought the odds were stacked against him, that he could put together 1 year of where he could get the kind of attention, the kind of draft grades that I believe he will get, and the opportunity to be a first-round draft pick. But I think he wanted to see if that could play out in this offense. If he could play 1 year in this offense, see what would happen, and then maybe go from there. So, yet again, this goes back, in my opinion, to the A's. If you're going to let the young man do this, I'm sorry. But that's on you. You cannot fault this kid for having this rare opportunity and all of a sudden have to take him to court over different things. And you know what? Even the money that he's given back, all of a sudden sue him for more money or anything like that to me is just ridiculous, because this is a kid who is still making a decision on his life. And you know what? Yeah, he didn't have to sign with the A's, but I think in his heart of hearts, that was what he felt he was probably going to do. But if things changed dramatically for him, which they did, the A's did not think this guy would be a first-round draft pick in the NFL or a Heisman Trophy winner. And I don't think Kyler Murray thought that that was going to be a reality. But when it did present itself, I mean, that's like me saying to you, TJ, you know what? You honored your, you signed a contract to work here. All of a sudden, this great opportunity came along that you didn't expect, but you can make more money. You can have a chance to do something you still love to do. And I'm going to sit here and be sour about it and say, no, I'm sorry, man. You signed the contract with us. So if you leave, you know what? Go ahead. Fine. But we're going to make sure we grab all the money that you got in your signing bonus. And I'm never going to give you the time of day because you're a jerk. Who wouldn't do that? Mm-hmm. Like in every type of job out there, like who wouldn't do that? So why is it different for a guy who decided to change his mind and decide to go all in on football? It makes so much more sense to me, and I just don't see why anybody can sit there and be like, this is just the dumbest mistake. What are you thinking? What are you thinking? If you think this is so dumb, like, yeah. I would literally love to hear from you on why it is a dumb move for Kyler Murray to not play football.
So I am curious, though, Nick, because obviously what I wanted was for him to play football, and basketball, football are my two favorite sports. Correct me if I'm wrong. I think baseball and football are your two favorite sports. I would maybe even say you like baseball more than football. Is that fair to say?
Yeah.
Now, I think we both agree that this makes sense and that's right fit. But you being a baseball guy, I thought maybe you wouldn't like it and you would have preferred him to choose baseball. Is there any selfish part of that where you wish he would have chose baseball?
No.
No, you don't?
No, not at all. Because these types of guys, whether people understand it or not, they come through the draft all the time. And we don't hear from a lot of them again. So I did not want to see a kid who could potentially alter a football organization. And maybe he won't. Maybe he will just be a college stud. But that's the beauty of it. Then he could pursue baseball again. Mm-hmm. I mean, the odds that he makes a major league roster after spending 4 or 5 years in the pros in football compared to going right now are probably not all that different. Because unless you are a 6'7", 95-mile-an-hour plus lefty, your path to Major League Baseball out of college, it's not as easy as people think, even if you are a top 10 draft pick. And I'm talking about overall top 10 draft, because he went, what, number 9 overall?
Yeah.
Number 9 overall.
So I guess maybe my next question that would be is, do you think baseball needs to look at how they bring in young players into their sport? Because it seems like the NBA drafts and the NBA are a big success because you get to see all these young guys play right away. It seems like rookie year. Baseball, and same with NFL, it seems like with baseball, you got to wait 4 or 5 years and maybe you'll make it to the majors. I feel like that's not appealing to the young athlete right now.
Well, for baseball, though, I just think it's an apples and oranges type thing, because it's a completely different sport where unless you are a pitcher, a guy that you can, I think, easier than position players, project what this person's going to be and fast track this person compared to a position player where you've got to adjust to professional pitching. If you are a position player, if you are a Kyler Murray, you can't just run right out there and all of a sudden you're going to be able to hit Major League Baseball sliders, Major League Baseball, you know, fastballs even. I mean, yeah, every now and then you're going to face that 90-plus pitcher in college. But as far as the kind of breaking stuff that you're going to see at the pro level, that takes a lot of time to adjust. Then you've got to adjust also the part of playing that many games that throughout that long of a season. Compared to college, it's a lot different. So I don't know if you could really change that, to be honest with you. I think that's what you kind of understand. And in Kyler Murray's case, yeah, you get guys that are dual-sport athletes a lot that'll come and end up playing baseball. But at some point that they decided to make their peace with the other sport and say, you know what, I'm good. I'm done with that. Baseball's what it's going to take. And you understand that going in that, hey, as a position player, this is going to be a grind. And yeah, for every 10 phenomenal position players, you might get one or two that fast track in. You might, because they just have the goods and they show it in a quick amount of time. But usually that's going to be within a 1 or 2 year span. It's not like by September call-ups, they're up and playing and then they never look back. I mean, it's very rare. It really is.
Yeah. I mean, it is rare for the Deion Sanders, Bo Jacksons, the Kyler Murrays, it appears. They're probably more like the Kyra Coopers, right, for Nebraska.
Yeah.
Maybe if they would have devoted themselves to one sport instead of football and baseball, maybe it would have turned out better. But it seemed like being split between those two wasn't as beneficial for him.
Right. I mean, guys like Kyler Murray, like Bo Jackson, Deion Sanders, they all did something good in baseball, but they weren't a well-rounded player. Bo Jackson was an amazing power hitter, but his strikeout numbers were way up. And yeah, he could run, so he's going to give you some defensive plays as well with a cannon for an arm. But as far as a well-rounded, all-around hitter, he wasn't quite there. But still, he was the exception. You know, guys that can play football at a high level and baseball at a high level where you are a legitimate major leaguer, they just don't exist. You don't see that a lot. So the fact that I know has floated out, oh, well, Kyler Murray might try to do the Bo Jackson, Deion Sanders thing. Even Kyler Murray realized, nah, that's probably going to be more challenging than I'm willing to take on. So I think for Kyler Murray, it makes sense. But to your question, I don't really know what baseball could do, because that development, being able to go through the farm system, it's key. Because the last thing you want to do is put these guys right into the fire. They lose their confidence. They never get it back again. And then you lost your investment. Because then those guys are completely shelled. And they don't think they can ever make it back. It's amazing how mental it becomes in baseball if you do go too fast. It's happened a lot. And so I think a lot of organizations are very careful. Even a guy that looks like he is a can't-miss prospect, you are going to put him through the necessary trials to make sure that he is that guy that you felt was worth drafting in the first round.
Well, I'm just kind of thinking out loud here. So, to my knowledge, I don't know, has TV people ever partnered with minor leagues to promote those athletes or those teams there? Because I think that could be a way for Major League Baseball to, like, hey, come check out these guys while they're learning how to play. But the only time I can think of that is you just have to go to their website and maybe they'll be streaming it.
Yeah, it's a fair question. I think it goes back once again to the length of the season.
Yeah.
And knowing that you already have, you know, TV deals with every organization, that the length of the season through, you know, AAA or even, you know, AA, it's a lot to account for. I mean, it's a fair question though when it comes to promoting and being able to market the younger players, even if they're not with a major league team, is what you're getting at, right? Yeah, it's kind of a tough, I think it's a tough thing just because, yet again, you go back to the length of the seasons in the sport of baseball.
Yeah, because like as a Royals fan right now, when the team's not as good up in the majors, but there's guys being talked about in the minors that I wouldn't mind seeing how they're doing, like that could be a chance of like, oh, they're on Fox Sports Midwest -2 or -3 instead of the main channel. Like that, I feel like that could kind of be appealing.
I don't think it'd be the worst thing. I don't know if you could do them all, but you never know. We might get there at some point. And that Rob Manfred, he's got a sharp mind when it comes to appealing to everyone, even people who are not baseball fans. Kareem Hunt signing with the Cleveland Browns. I will tell you, I breathed a big sigh of relief. I'll tell you what I'm talking about next. It's AM 590 ESPN. I'm
on. Tuesday on the Bottom Line starting at 10 a.m. on AM 590. Former Husker Josh Banderas, playing in the Alliance of American Football, joins us. Plus Adam Rittenberg on the college football transfer portal and Sam McEwen talking Husker secondary. All starting at 10 a.m. on AM 590 ESPN. I'm on.
Michael Sevier gets our local coverage started every day, starting at 10 a.m. Bottom Line. Want to get into Kareem Hunt here in just a moment, but we do get a statement from the Nebraska Athletic Department involving the Maurice Washington story, and we will refresh that for you here in a moment. But this is the statement from the Nebraska Athletic Department. It says, last fall, we were contacted by the Nebraska Attorney General's Office and the University of Nebraska-Lincoln Police Department and made aware that officials in California were interested in interviewing Maurice Washington about a prior incident. Details were not shared, and there was no additional follow-up with the Nebraska Athletic Department. Recently, we were made aware that may be filed against Maurice in California. We have not had a chance to review the charges and will continue to monitor this ongoing legal process. So that is from the Nebraska Athletic Department. Essentially, it made it sound like that this was something that was going on from the state of California. But when you're not giving the information, that information not shared with you, it seemed like it was more of a, okay, we will monitor anything that continues to develop with this. And it sounds like, okay, now this is the recent development. So I don't know, and I'm sure there's probably some people out there saying, well, wait, why didn't they follow up? Well, if they're not shared any kind of information, what are you following up on? It would be my question. So it sounds like they were made aware of something. They didn't know the extent of it because that was not shared from both the Nebraska Attorney General's Office and the University of Nebraska-Lincoln Police Department. And that's kind of where they stand right now. They are continuing to review the charges and are monitoring the ongoing legal process involving Maurice Washington. And then the other part of that we told you back in the 2 o'clock hour is that according to several sources close to the investigation, that there is a warrant that has been issued for the arrest of Maurice Washington on the charges of child pornography and the new California law of revenge porn. We'll tell you more about that story if you're just kind of following up. But I do want to get into this Kareem Hunt thing real quickly, TJ. This was, I mentioned, I was kind of relieved when this happened. I know people might say, "What? Wait, you want to see him play for a team?" I didn't necessarily want to see him play for the team that I root for. And that's kind of where I was. I was actually having this conversation with a good friend of mine on Saturday where I was talking about how I'm kind of at an impasse when it comes to what's good for the team on the field, yet what is not necessarily good for the team when it comes to its image or just the overall moral equity of something like this when you're a fan. This is difficult because one of the teams that Kareem Hunt was linked to was the Chicago Bears because of Matt Nagy and his relationship. And during Matt Nagy's postseason press conference, he had mentioned Kareem Hunt's name quite a bit and talked about how he does believe in second chances. And that was something that he learned from Andy Reid. Well, a lot of people started to take that as the Bears are going to go after him. The Bears are, and they very well might have. I don't know that. But what we did learn is that the Cleveland Browns have signed him to a one-year deal. He will be a restricted free agent after this upcoming season. So the Cleveland Browns will still own his rights after this season. Now, of course, with this story that you know, there has not been any kind of arrest. There was never any charges. A source close to the situation tells ESPN that the discipline process from the league is still ongoing and nowhere near done. He's still on the exempt list. He was placed on the exempt list shortly before he was released from the Kansas City Chiefs. He is not eligible to play until the NFL completes its investigation into these incidents and a decision on a potential discipline is made. Look, he might miss 4 or 5 games. I don't know. Maybe more.
Maybe a year.
Who knows?
Maybe they won't even play for them.
I mean, I think any team is going to look at that in such a difficult optic of, like, and I'll just do it from a Bears scope. Would he be an upgrade and a good complimentary back to Tariq Cohen? Absolutely he would. Absolutely he would. But is there somebody else that you could find that doesn't come in with that kind of baggage where you risk, I don't say you would, but you risk alienating your fan base because of the moral principle of bringing on a guy so fresh off of an incident that we all saw with our own eyes?
I just want to clarify, you said upgrade over Tariq Cohen. I feel like he'd just be a nice addition. I'd rather have Tariq Cohen than...
Well, I'm sorry, a complimentary.
Okay.
Back, because it does sound like they are going to part ways with Jordan Howard.
Okay.
It seems like the Bears are probably going to go a different direction than Jordan Howard. So that looks like the most pressing issue facing the offense is getting that complimentary back with Tariq Cohen. And so Kareem Hunt, yeah, in my opinion, would have been a perfect complimentary back and an upgrade at that position over Jordan Howard. I have no question. But the moral part of this, the just overall like right thing to do, I didn't want to have to sort of grapple with that. Like, I didn't want to be watching a game on Sunday in a big-time matchup. They're playing the Vikings, you know, to control the division. And all of a sudden, Kareem Hunt has this amazing play to give the Bears the deciding, you know, edge in that game. And I got to be excited about that. Like, there's part of me that has a problem with that. But I love that team, and I want to see him. I want to see him win a Super Bowl.
See, that's the moral conundrum in sports.
Yeah,
it's just tough because, like, I mean, obviously, I feel like if Chiefs fans were to be upset about this move, it'd be like, well, okay, well, hold up here. What are we talking about with Tyreek Hill? Or do you have any problem rooting for your team with him on there as well?
Yeah, and it's amazing how much you can convince yourself as a fan. Maybe how justifiable either the actions were, which I hope no one's justifying those actions. Or justifying your team doing it because enough time has passed, or, you know, we need to give him a second chance. But then if he's on another team, you're quick to judge that team and their decision to bring a guy on like that. I'm glad I don't have to now deal with that. Like, it's been taken out of my hands, so I'm relieved that I don't have to actually juggle that. I can say, well, it's not an issue anyway because the Bears don't have him. Now, I hope they still get a good quality running back, and I hope he has a clean slate and track record as opposed to what Kareem Hunt has. Now, I will say this. I could see this being a little bit more well-received in the Cleveland area because he is a homegrown guy. He is an Ohio guy. I can see the Cleveland fan base being a little bit more willing to welcome him in.
Toledo was his college, correct? Yep.
Than other organizations out there. Because the fan base, that part of it is always tough. You'll deal with the outside world when you have to, but you don't. I don't think you want to alienate your fans because they're the ones who are directly impacting you financially. And then there's the other part where I think maybe this could be a good thing for Kareem Hunt. Now going to be playing pro football at home. And maybe that's what he needs to move past what took place on a really bad, bad decision by Kareem Hunt. So maybe it worked out well for both parties, but for me as a Bears fan, I'm glad I don't have to deal with it. And I'm sure there's a lot of other organizations that were maybe linked to him that are saying, you know what, he could have helped our team, but I'm kind of glad I don't have to sort of grapple with the good and the bad of it. You know?
Yeah, I get it. And obviously, we'll just have to see what's next with the commissioner's list, right, what he does. And, you know, I have total, complete faith in Roger Goodell to do the right thing because he's never gotten anything wrong before.
So. Yeah, sure. Now, what would be interesting, too, is say the Bears did get him and they decided, you know, in the third round that they didn't want to go with a running back that they had an opportunity to get, and all of a sudden, he's out for the season. Well, then you're kind of looking at your organization like, you got to be kidding me. Not only is the guy someone that doesn't necessarily represent high character, but you also put the kind of stock into him that he'd be available this year, and now he's not, and you passed up on an opportunity to get a guy to help the your need was.
But if he's part of the Browns, they already have two solid running backs with Chubb and Duke Senior, Junior, whatever it is. Yeah.
So it'll be all right.
Yeah.
But from the Bears standpoint, I wouldn't like that either. So once again, yay. I'm glad I don't have to deal with it. Reed Forgrave coming up next. Going to talk the very latest in NBA headlines, maybe even some college basketball as well. That is next. It's AM 590 ESPN. I always feel like Zion Williamson is playing in front of like every big stud in the NBA, and it's got to be made known that, hey, he did really well in front of LeBron James and Rondo. We'll talk some NBA hoops, though. Reed Forgrave, CBSSports.com. Reed, the Zion Williamson thing is interesting because we know how dominant of a college basketball player he is. The comparisons that are being made, whether he's dominant like Shaq was in college or, you know, kind of has that LeBron just rare skill set. When you do talk to NBA executives, how do they sort of categorize what Zion Williamson could be to an organization?
Yeah, I mean, as much as he has become the face of college basketball, you know, stop trying for Zion, the face of the NBA draft. I read something, I think, on the Big Lead this morning that said he's the best story in the NBA right now because everyone knows that the Warriors are going to win it all. I think that's silly, and I think we need to, like, pump the brakes just a little bit on this. Zion Williamson, like, first of all, Zion Williamson is awesome. This is not disparaging Zion Williamson, but as much as we are all focused on him, the NBA draft world is such an echo chamber. This happens like almost every year where people get behind the guy. I mean, you remember the way it was with Markelle Fultz. Mm-hmm. I always thought hey, Markelle Fultz has a lot of potential, but I was a Jason Tatum guy, and it seems like everyone's like, oh, that's stupid. Markelle Fultz is the consensus number one pick. There aren't many times that I'm right, but that was one of them. So, like, I do think we need to, like, pump our brakes a little bit. It's probably going to be Zion. If it's not Zion as the number one pick, it's going to be R.J. Barrett, is what I've heard from executives. I'm personally an R.J. Barrett fan, and I would say that I am certainly in the minority there. But let me explain why. One thing that's both great about Zion, but also, like, maybe a little bit concerning is, you know, really, we don't really have an example of what a physical specimen like this could be in the NBA. He could be anything. He could be the canvas upon which you paint every one of your basketball dreams.
Yeah.
But we also don't know what a guy who's, you know, 6'6 with a, you know, absurd vertical, but also weighs, what, 280, 285? How's his body going to keep up, you know, 5 years from now? How are knees going to keep up? That's one thing that I've heard from executives. What does he actually look like in the NBA? How much is the, you know, lack of excellent shooting really going to hurt him? If you're a team that needs a burst of excitement, who wants to sell some tickets, then I don't think there's any question that you take Zion Williamson with the number one overall pick. If you're a team that is, you know, looking at their needs or a little bit more concerned about winning or which player has sort of an NBA prototype, I think that's where I don't think it's crazy at all to think that R.J. Barrett could be the number one pick over Zion.
Read the trade deadline. It came and went. We saw some interesting moves and a flurry of moves, but nothing that involved one Anthony Davis. But I want to look at the East right now, because Milwaukee did make, you know, some reshuffling, had some moves as well. You look at Toronto, you look at, I mean, I guess, do we still consider the Celtics to be in that mix? Just my question right now, after the trade deadline, any more clarity, in your opinion, on who the front runner of the East is right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's even less clarity, to be completely honest. Vegas odds have the exact same odds for those top four teams that you just mentioned, the Bucks, the Raptors, the Sixers, and the Celtics at winning the East. The Celtics, boy, I mean, they sure feel like a mess, and yet they have the second highest net rating in the NBA, and yet they still have, like, probably deeper talent than any other team in the NBA, and they have championship pedigree in Kyrie Irving. Well, depending what you think of him as a leader, that's either a good thing or a bad thing. Mm-hmm. They seriously have chemistry issues. So right now, if you're asking me who I think will be the team that come out of the Eastern Conference, I'd pick the Raptors. I don't feel certain about that at all. I just think that they have that sort of versatility and switchability. They're able to have a lot of different lineup combinations. I think Marc Gasol is a bit of an odd fit there, but he gives them someone who can go up against Joel Embiid, which I think explains the thinking behind that trade. Just earlier today, they are planning to announce that they're planning to sign Jeremy Lin off the buyout market, which I think helps. Remember, they gave up their backup point guard, DeLon Wright, in that deal for Marc Gasol. So to me, I'd pick the Raptors. That said, if someone wants to say, hey, I think it's the Bucks, hey, man, they got the number one net rating in the league. They look awesome. They got the best defense in the league. If someone wants to say it's the Sixers, I'd say, hey, they got the best starting five outside the Golden State Warriors. They look awesome. Tobias Harris looks like he fits in perfectly. When I look at the Sixers, my main concern isn't for this year. It is, look at everything they gave up in order to get both Jimmy Butler and Tobias Harris. And remember, these two guys are unrestricted free agents at the end of this year. If this thing goes south, it could go south in a hurry.
Well, and that was kind of where I was going next with the Sixers. I mean, with the starting five that they have, clearly the window is open, but it almost seemed like last season in the postseason, that inexperience. I know sometimes we beat too much on the inexperience versus experience in the postseason, but it legitimately looked like the Sixers, whether it was a bad matchup or just weren't quite ready to take that next step forward. I feel like they have to do that this year with the reasons you gave up, but also the fact that, yeah, I mean, the starting five is, I mean, it's a solid one, but are you going to have those guys going forward?
Yeah, I mean, that is a huge question. That is kind of why I did not – look, I think if we're just talking about this year in a vacuum, mm-hmm. you can't deny that that was a great move. Getting Tobias Harris as sort of the, you know, fourth wheel on this train. that's a really bad analogy. Fourth wheel and train. but like when you look forward, it's like this process has been this like patient, slowly building thing. You accumulate assets in order to spend them at the right time. The question is, you know, what's the hurry? Maybe this all works out for them. Maybe they sign both of these guys. Jimmy Butler doesn't blow this franchise up like he did the franchise in the town that I live in, Minneapolis. Maybe everything works out perfectly and they make it to the finals and get swept by the Warriors. Cause that's inevitable, right? If you make it to the finals, you're getting swept by the Warriors.
Yeah.
But like, I worry that this was kind of the past 4 months for the Sixers franchise was the opposite of the process. I agree with you. They needed to do something. And I hate arguing with a team that certainly got better this year, but boy, I think they have more pressure on them than any other team out there to do well. I mean, at least make the Eastern Conference Finals. And with those four teams at the top of the East, two of them got to lose for the Eastern Conference Finals. So it's going to be some bad feelings going into the offseason for some of these teams.
Reed Forgrave, CBS Sports. Reed, I want to get your thoughts on it. We mentioned Anthony Davis is staying put for now. We know what his thoughts are in the future as far as at least wanting to possibly be a part of the LA Lakers. They had a shot as well as other teams. What did you take away from the fact that he is where he was originally, and what does this mean, in your opinion, if anything, for his future?
Yeah, you know, I'm going to be the king of like wishy-washy takes for you. Like, I mean, on one hand,
it's all right. It's snowing. It's snowing, and it's Monday. So you know, why not?
That's a good point, man. That's a good point. Look, I think there was a better trade out there than that Lakers trade, and it's quite clearly the trade that the Boston Celtics can make come this offseason.
Yep.
And you have to assume that Jason Tatum will be the centerpiece of that deal. The fact that Danny Ainge was able to, you know, talk Dell Demps off the ledge there. I'm sure that, you know, in fact, I've heard from sources that Jason Tatum was a key part of that. They're just like, wouldn't give him a guarantee that Tatum will be in the deal, but that he said, quote, everything's on the table. That said, like, that Lakers trade, that trade offer, whether the Pelicans were negotiating in good faith or in bad faith, they offered a lot. Like, I know that Lonzo Ball and Brandon Ingram have really struggled this year. And is that because they're not as good as we expected when both of them were number two picks just a few years ago? Or is it because they were playing with LeBron James? And it's really hard to play with LeBron James, especially when you don't have a great outside shot. I don't know. If that trade offer had been made in the offseason, I think people would have been a lot higher on it and it would have looked a lot better. I do wonder if Dell Demps or whoever the future general manager is of the Pelicans, if and when Dell Demps gets fired, will come to regret that, because the Lakers, I heard lots of Lakers people who were hoping that trade wouldn't go through because they were offering everything for their now and for their future in order to get a big two of LeBron James and Anthony Davis. So many draft picks, so their entire young core. And you almost wondered if that becomes like the Herschel Walker trick.
I like that comparison, actually.
I live here in Minnesota, so like there's all sorts of things that just like you just become a very I've only lived here 4 years, but I'm becoming a very like jaded sports fan. Everything's bad. Everything's bad, Nick.
Hey, I now know that as a Bears fan too. I shouldn't say now know it, but having the kicker issues like the Vikings have, you know, I can at least relate to that.
I was at that Blair Walsh game when he shanked like the 4 yard field goal to win the game, and it was like, first of all, it was the coldest I've ever been.
And
I was in the press box. It was so cold. And second of all, it was like every Vikings fan in that stadium knew something was going to go wrong. And when it did, they were just like, yep, saw that coming. Time to go get drunk.
Reed Forgrave, CBSSports.com, covering the NBA, the NBA draft. Reed, appreciate it, man. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, great talking to you, man.
Yeah, the interesting part of the Anthony Davis thing. I was surprised. TJ, you're a little more well-versed on this than I am, but I was actually surprised that what the Lakers were offering almost didn't even seem like it was strongly considered by the Pelicans. Like, I don't know why. I don't know if there's some bitterness there knowing that Anthony Davis is saying, no, sorry, I don't want to be here. I didn't get it. I just didn't get it.
I mean, I guess according to Brian Windhorst, I think I was listening to him on TV one day, who I have on the show a lot, was just like, yeah, the Pelicans just didn't really want to do any type of business with the Lakers, yeah. So they were just kind of trolling them. Be like, yep, we'll pay attention, but no, we're not really at all. Too bad for you guys.
That was strange. Hey, coming up the 4 o'clock hour, going to kind of reset that whole Maurice Washington story. If you're just joining us and you want to know what is going on, we will give you the very latest. Still some time for your calls to 402-573-0590. We are going to be talking some Husker hoops from over the weekend. Chris Hedy going to be joining us in about a half hour. Get the latest on Nebraska basketball and the ship that continues to sink. It's not been good. It kind of went as you would expect at Mackey Arena in West Lafayette, Indiana, in the hands of the Purdue Boilermakers. Got this tweet real quickly and just wanted to give some thoughts on it. This comes from Garrett. He said, I know there's the whole innocent until proven guilty thing, but I just don't see how this ends with Washington being a part of the program. Maybe I'm making a bigger deal than it needs to be, but it's not a good situation. I think he's absolutely right. It's not a good situation. And I'm like Brian Christopherson, and back in the 2 o'clock hour, we kind of talked about this. I'm going to reset this story for you as we get to the top of the hour after SportsCenter involving Maurice Washington. But it just seems like there's some information that we haven't been privy to yet that I'm going to kind of reserve judgment on this whole thing to see what really to make of this thing. But definitely not a good situation. AM 590 ESPN tomorrow.